Good morning, everybody. We must start with our business for the day. Immediately, I don't see the agenda. Oh, this presentation. Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. The acting DG, you're welcome with your staff. We must start with the presentation. What we are expecting from you, which I think that is the what the honorable members would expect from you. First, we must say that we heartily congratulate you for getting an unqualified report. So you are out of the doldrums. We hope you keep it up. And but then there are findings in that unqualified report. What we do not want to hear is your visions, your missions. We know them. They have not changed. Your constitutional mandate has not changed. Now, we need to know the level of compliance with legislation in terms of policy formulation and implementation, your procedures and your controls. And then you must also say to the committee how your performance is aligned to your indicators or predetermined objectives. I think that should be our strategic thrust as we discuss. Members may also want to throw in something that they want to hear. Can we say what do you want to hear before we give them an opportunity to report from members, or did I cover you? Honorable Isao?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the department did indicate some of the mitigating circumstances that, and also how they will deal with those challenges. But maybe if Acting DG can also just elaborate on some of those things, and particularly the TSI, the objectives that were set and the findings and what they've achieved to date in terms of those recommendations made by the TSI in particular, that impact on the performance of the department. So how we are going to resolve all those issues that have come up and the findings or emphasis of matter from the AG's office. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Isao. Any other thing which members would like to hear? I think that covers what this committee would like to hear from yourself, Acting DG, which makes your task very simple and straightforward today. Can we go straight to your first program, second program, third programs? Thank you. And in that framework. Thank you very much. We know you all, isn't it? And you know us. We don't have anybody new.
A special guest?
Can we know who is our special guest today?
Sorry, sir. Good morning. I'm going to come out again right on the British.
Thank you very much, sir. You're heartily welcome to this. Over to you, Acting DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the members of the committee and the staff and all others present. Thank you for the introduction, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me say that I think the department is very proud to have achieved the unqualified audit finding with findings. I think it shows the direction we're trying to take the department. But at the same time, we're the first to acknowledge that there's lots of work to be done to get us to where we want to be. As we know, the audit outcomes largely says to us that we were able to give the AG confidence on what we were reporting on. The question now is to improve the indicators that we're reporting on. That's my approach in that direction. But I think I must say that it's taken a team effort to get to this position. It's taken a lot of hard work. It's some colleagues, in particular CFO, spent 2 months really focusing day and night on this issue to get us to this point. And I really want to thank my team for putting up with all the efforts to get to this what for me is the starting position. We now need to focus on delivery. Chair, I'm going to jump, as you said, you know the mission and the values of the department, so I'm going to jump slides 3 and 4. And then if we can go to the appropriation statement on slide 5. In total, in the last financial year, the department was allocated 597 million rand. We spent 504 million, and there was an under expenditure of 92 million. That gives us an expenditure in total of 84.4%, which is a significant improvement from the just under 60% in the previous year. And as you'll see, there were some areas where there was still significant under expenditure. However, many of the problems relate to dealing with external service providers. And if we had got those issues right, we would have, and we were hoping to be in the 90% with expenditure, but unfortunately that was not to be. If you look at the breakdown per the programs, the expenditure in Program 1 was 99%, so they spent almost all the money. Program 2, socioeconomic services, was 77%. And Program 3, Empowerment Stakeholder Management, was 82%. We'll come to the detail around that in a moment. If we look then at the economic classification of the expenditure on the next slide, we'll see that in terms of compensation of employees, our expenditure was 99.5%. Percentage-wise, it brings us just under the 100% compared to the previous year where we were on 103% expenditure. But I think we all know that until we finalize the restructuring of the department, there's always going to be serious pressures around compensation of employees because using contract workers is more expensive than using full-time workers. In terms of goods and services, we were on 88%, up from 70% in the previous year. And then transfers and subsidies, we were on 72.3%, up from 26% in the previous year. And those two areas are the areas in which we, by and large, pay for the delivery of benefits, in particular transfers and subsidies, and the increased payment on benefits is reflected in the figures there. And then on capital assets, we were at 96%. Chair, if we look at the explanations for the variances per branch on the next slide. Yeah. As I said, administration essentially spent all the money that was there. One of the major issues we had dealt with in Program 1 administration was the accruals from CETA
from the previous year. So that also pushed up the expenditure. I'm hoping that we will be able to say by the end of this financial year that we've dealt with all the accrual issues. They put serious pressure on money that's available to spend on benefits. In terms of CES, the underspend was mainly as a result of problems at NSUS. As you know, our higher education payments, most of them are paid through NSUS. When we started the year, there was still a balance that we had at NSFAS, which I hadn't spent in the previous year. We then did not transfer more money to them until they had used up that balance. And then we wanted to transfer more money so that we could hope we were trying to settle most of our what we owed for this academic year before the 31st of March. In other words, in the previous financial year, so that it would have reduced the load on us. Unfortunately, there's severe problems at NSFAS. We haven't been able to get a proper grip on those problems. And those problems manifested themselves largely from January to the middle of this year, and that was in the period when we wanted to one, we needed to make the payments for the beginning of the academic year, but also we wanted to close the books on the previous financial year. We're still regularly meeting and engaging with NSFAS, but I still remain very concerned about NSFAS's ability to deliver a service in terms of the MOU and the SLAs between ourselves and them. And I can say up front that I'm sure members, but myself included, regularly, daily getting messages from people who still haven't been paid by NSFAS. And I don't want to dwell on this too much. We can maybe in another occasion, I see it's on the program anyway of the committee for later in the month or next month. But I think we will be able to show you all the steps we've taken to try and engage with them to get proper delivery. However, I think the point here is if we had spent that 70 million as well, we would have significantly pushed up the expenditure. However, what we couldn't do was transfer money to NSFAS whilst they still had money which was unspent. And that's why we were forced to keep it back. It would have been dumping otherwise. And then in ESM, We have been having problems around the skills development program, and we were not happy with the output of the program and also the expenditure there. And then we also had under expenditure due to the issues in the provincial offices. We've procured more offices, but we still don't have 9 offices, so we tried to get those issues sorted out. Then slide 8, the next slide. We did receive the unqualified audit, and that is an improvement from previous audit outcome. I think I've mentioned that. Then I think slide 9 just shows that with better colors. And then if we look at slide 10, if we look at the main issues that the AG is raising, which we've tried to summarize on the slide, the firstly, emphasis of matter, the uncertainty because of the litigation that the department's involved in. In particular the one court case, the Zeal court case, the quantum is very large that's involved there, and we're looking at like a third of the budget of the department, so that's a very serious matter. Then in terms of predetermined objectives, We've had problems in both service delivery branches, SES and ESM, in terms of the accuracy and the reliability of the information that was provided for the audit. And this is something that we've been trying to deal with. I think it's been a learning experience for all of us, including for the leadership of the branches. And I think towards the end of the audit process, we were able to give information that gave confidence to the AG. However, the task is to have that information available all the way through the audit process, not after it's basically being concluded. In terms of non-compliance, there were some issues with regard to the financial statements when they were initially prepared. However, we later resolved those issues with the AG. We've had problems with expenditure management in that period. We think we've by and large resolved those issues, especially towards the second half of last year, and I don't think those issues will be repeated in this year. That had to do with controls for approval and processing of payments. Strategic planning and performance management. We still need to beef up our risk management and also internal control and ensure that we have proper information to reflect the performance of the programs that we're involved in. Procurement and contract management. These are issues around supply chain and ensuring that we follow proper procedures. We're still trying to resolve some of the outstanding contracts that we inherited, and they directly impinge on this because once the, for instance, we're still trying to resolve our cell phone contract and a new process around that, our travel agency as well. But those contracts were entered into 2, 3, 4 years ago, and we can't reverse the mistakes that were made in the procurement at that stage. So until we procure new services, those problems will remain. Leadership. The point that's made here is that the accounting officer did not exercise oversight responsibility to review financial and performance reporting compliance and related internal controls. This is also part of the change management process in the department, and I think we hope that those lessons have been learned and we will have better reporting and oversight on performance of the department. Then financial and performance management. Management did not implement effective controls to ensure that information contained in the financial statements and performance report were reliable before submission for audit. I think I've partially already spoken to that. One of the problems we also had was that the information we submitted was not properly audited by our own internal audit before submission. And that's also a lesson that we've learned in that process. Then the contribution to the executive authority's priorities, which is the next slide, slide 11. What we've tried to do there is list the priorities outlined in the strategic plan and then show how far we've got to implementing those priorities. So the first one is moving the department to a fully functional independent vote with its own systems. We have moved and we're now implementing risk-based audits based on the approved risk management plan. We are doing risk assessments. We are now fully operational on BAS and the payroll systems, and we are able to properly plan and monitor the work in the department and submit them on time to external stakeholders like BPME, etc., Treasury, DPSA, etc. Priority two, strengthen governance and oversight protocols to give effect to the provisions of the Act. We have Operational Appeals Board and Advisory Council. FUNDA is in place. And we had operational audits and risk committees. Provision of immediate social relief of distress to most vulnerable military veterans. 2,243 military veterans are receiving social relief of distress at the quantum of 1,200 rand per month. But I think as we're in discussions, we're trying to ensure that this is sustainable for the department and is done on the basis of policy and procedures. Priority four, to provide comprehensive support services to military veterans and their dependents. We have, in the last financial year and flowing over into this financial year, there's been a significant increase in the number of military veterans receiving education support. We went up from about 4,000 to now 7,146. There were more applications, some of which were turned down. It's a significant increase, and 50 of those students have graduated. However, as I think we all know, this is putting huge pressures on the department to function within its budget. And we're still seized with trying to resolve those issues, including for the coming academic year. 1,849 veterans received access to training and skills development. Then in terms of wellness and healthcare, another, in the last financial year, another 1,074 military veterans were authorized to get access to healthcare. And the total is 15,740. And then counseling was also provided to 1,593 military veterans. In terms of education, training, skills development, no new job placements were registered, but we've spent quite a lot of time trying to resolve some of the problems with the existing placements. And then 179 veterans were provided with advice on business support and development. In terms of housing, we achieved 168 new houses, and the breakdown is there. And then we also assisted 104 owners of mortgage property that was in distress. This obviously remains a major worry for the department. We're way under the target. The target last year and this year is 1,000. And we've really been trying to engage with DHS and the provincial government, and in some cases the municipalities, to try and resolve this. And a lot more work needs to be done in that regard. Provision of burial support and compensation. 460 military veterans families received burial support, and 105 a one-off compensation benefit. The compensation benefit has required a medical assessment, and we have a team doing that. We haven't covered all the provinces yet. And we've made more payments since the end of that financial year, and we're hoping that we will be able to cover most of the outstanding cases in this year. Then in terms of priority five, promote empowerment programs for military veterans. As we've said, 179 were provided with business support and development. 22 letters were issued for military veteran-run businesses, and 132 military veterans companies were registered in the financial year. empowerment of veterans to enhance their contribution to reconciliation and nation building. We have been engaging with the National Heritage Council to collaborate on memorialization projects. And we've also engaged more recently with other departments like arts and culture, public works, COPTA, etc. And we're hoping that we'll be able to show in the coming year reorientation in terms of the issue of heritage and memorialization. Priority six, in terms of honoring military veterans' heritage, we've been involved at the castle and opened the Heritage and Memorialization Center. We had the reburial at Bazia in the Eastern Cape for the Poko comrades who were executed in 1964. We've commemorated the 100 years anniversary of the sinking of the SS Mendi. We also have commemorated those from the Native Labour Corps who are buried in France, and also Delvalwood. Priority seven in terms of the database. There was a period where we suspended applications, processing of applications onto the database, but we then reopened it in that financial year so that we could have proper policy and SOP in place. We've engaged, as you know, with CETA, who are busy designing and implementing a new database management system, which is linked to the benefit management system. We've done some verification. We still have a lot of work to be done on the verification of the database. Then the communication plan. We've engaged in numerous events, stakeholder management, media campaigns, the website, etc. Okay. When we look at performance against the APP, and the performance targets. We see on slide 14, we had 23 targeted performance indicators for 16-17 financial year. Of the 23, 15 which were achieved, which constituted 65% for that year, and then 8 targets were not achieved. If we look in branch administration, program one, we achieved 8 of the 12 targets, 4 were not achieved, that's 67%. In CES, we achieved 4 of the 5 targets, which is 80%, and ESM, we achieved 3 of the 6 targets, which is 50%. When we come to human resource management, in terms of employment, in administration, there were 103 posts, 84 of which were filled, which gives us a vacancy rate on the establishment of 18%, 18.5%. But in addition to that, we had another 45 contractors and interns who were employed additional to the establishment. In CES, there were 20 posts, 17 of which were full. Excuse me. That's a 15% vacancy rate, and another 22 employees additional to the establishment. ESM, 46 posts, 32 full, that's a 30% vacancy rate, and 7 additional to the establishment. That gives us a total of 133 filled posts out of 169, 21% vacancy rate, and 74 employees additional to the establishment. I think the colleagues, what this table just points to me is what we've been pointing out in the last year, is that the current structure of the department does not focus on service delivery, which are done in terms of programs 2 and 3, and that by far the largest number of officials are in the administration, including those that are additional to the post. And that's something we've been grappling with, and we hope to resolve in this financial year. Filling of the SMS posts, I think the breakdown is clear of the vacancies, and that out of approximately a third of the SMS posts are vacant at the moment, 10 out of 31. Chairperson, that's the overview that we wanted to present. As I said at the beginning, there's a lot of work that that still needs to be done, but in terms of the two key targets that we set ourselves for the last financial year, which were to increase expenditure and to get an unqualified audit, I think we've made significant progress in both regards, but a lot of work remains.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, over to you. If there are any points of clarity, any directives that you want to give. Honourable Gamede, Honourable Isao, you'll follow.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and Acting DG. Thanks very much. Normally, we would want to appreciate the improvement, even if we haven't reached our destination. But at least it shows that we are going there. So, to everybody, we say keep it up. Just a few questions, run through certain pages, things that are of a major concern. The first one, it has been established that there are some beneficiaries that benefited but were not approved for educational support. That was also identified by the AG. The question is, how could that really happen? You know, because you've got a list, there are processes where you approve these things. That's the first issue. The other one is the issue also raised by the AG that at certain instances you'd find that suppliers were paid without rendering any services. Then the question also that follows is, what happens on such things? Consequence management, what happens? What do you do with those officials? One or two. The issue of the IT. You're getting support from AMSCO. But it looks like you have no plan of your own to be independent of them. Because the very same problem that you have is the very same problem that AMSCO has. So to put it in plain English, you might find a black person leading a blind person leading a blind person. because AMSCO has got a problem also, as identified by the AG, of the very same thing of IT. But then you rely on AMSCO. The other issue would be, when would you review or amend veterans regulations to include the educational support benefit that is currently provided by the department? Because as a committee, we've just been waiting for a number of amendments, because there are a number of things that need to change. Other than that, I'll come back later, Chair, but the last issue is the usual complaint. I think it's the third year we're talking about the issue of payment within 30 days. We always get the same problem, the same response. How best can we achieve this? I'm sure you know that when you come here, we're going to complain about this. Many SMMEs are closing because they're not being paid within 30 days. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to reiterate the sentiments of the previous speaker, Honorable Gamedi, about the achievements and the direction the department is moving in, with all the emphasis of matter that still needs to be dealt with, but it's a very positive shift that we see, and that there is the necessary evidence that's required for an order to take place and to move out of the red zone and into an unqualified area. The points I want to raise, Honorable Chair, is a number of issues, but I'll start off with one. There's 179 military vets that receive general advice on business support and development, and also there's 1,849 military vets that receive training and skills development. Now, the issue there is the department did indicate that they had some difficulty, but I'd like to know why so many people have been trained and advised and yet they cannot be placed. Is the level of competency too low for the requirements of the jobs that need to be applied for, or did the department fail in its pursuit of establishing relations or service level agreements or whatever MOUs that need to be in place, and also to, of course, request the necessary opportunities that exist within the various government departments and elsewhere. Then on the issue of the training and skills development, there seems to be also contradictions. The one report says 1,849, that's page 31. Page 42 says 1,908 out of 3,500, so there was an underachievement, but it's a different figure that's been quoted. And the AG claims on page 75 that the actual audited evidence says that 2,480 people actually received training and skills development. So I would like to know, why do we have all these contradictions? And it's not only in this instance. There's also other instances and also some mistakes in the calculations, which I will refer to later. I would like to know why we have these contradictions and why is there no certainty on the number of people that's been trained. If they go through a process and they apply and they process and they're on the system, we should be able to calculate that quite accurately. The other one, of course, is the 22 military veterans organizations that receive letters of support. Could one just find out what is the actual nature of the letter? And, of course, the purpose of seeking a letter of support from the department. And if we have an MOU SLN agreement with departments, and that also the military veteran businesses are also considered preferred bidders or preferred contractors, would receive more points than the normal person that applies for a job or a tender or contract that exists within government. What is the actual nature of the 22 business letters that were issued or support letters? The 132 military veterans owned businesses that registered for this year is a very good achievement. However, I find it also contradictory that the Deputy Minister of Defense indicates in his foreword that there is 37 new businesses, and for the year under discussion, 100 were only achieved. Completely in contradiction to what is stated by the department itself. So I'm not sure who's giving the necessary information to the Deputy Minister that he actually makes wrong statements or did the department record information incorrectly? The other one, of course, we see the achievement under SRD, but I would like also to reiterate that there's a number of problems. I receive regular calls of people that are in distress and that are complaining. Sometimes they get a parcel or sometimes they get the voucher, and other times they have to struggle for months to get another one, and the situation that they are in has not been addressed. So we find that's a huge improvement from the 2000 to 2243 overachievement. And we find also the shift that happened from the EA, from the stakeholder and economic empowerment side, the money that was shifted from the over to the SES, to socioeconomic services. We find that when we look at that, that the shift has taken place because of the need within that area and the underspending in the one, but yet there had happened underspending within the SES program itself. So we find huge amounts gone over, transferred, but it's also underutilized. So the question that arises, if there's a demand and it's oversubscribed, it means there's more money required in that area. And that the planning that took place, therefore, we should ask the question, was the planning done sufficiently so that it anticipated, expected that growth that took place? But of course, all these figures that we have is based on a database that is unreliable at this stage. So there can be no accurate quantum given and proper planning. And this is the problem I have with the future of this institution and the actual budget of the institution. It cannot be planned for. And I appreciate what the acting DG is saying, of course, that the HR requirement has been totally underestimated for the department, for the services that it's got to deliver. But if that was approved by DPSA and considered by Treasury, then what were the issues then that were taken into consideration to approve such an establishment which is totally underperforming and understaffed to deliver on the requirements or its mandate? Mm-hmm. So unless we sort out the important pillars that drive the institution, which is first and foremost a database, if that is not sorted out as soon as possible, and on that basis, I'd like to ask, what is the actual status of the database? Because it's been overhauled, and of course, what is the verification percentage reached at this stage? The last time it was 37%. The numbers have increased from 55,000, it's now at 73,000 military veterans registered on the database. So what is the actual status of the database? When do we intend to have it completed so that it can actually give accurate statistics on the military vets and the needs and what quantums are required to deal with those deserving military veterans. The housing issue is 168 reported in the 16-17 financial year, and in the previous year it was recorded at 130, and therefore we have the AG's report saying 298. However, the AG, I think, makes a terrible mistake. The AG actually says that since inception, this department only delivered 298 houses. Now, I don't believe that is correct, because just before that, the previous year, two houses were delivered as well. And there were a number of municipalities that also built houses. The ones in the Western Cape has not even been recorded. The ones in Sedibeng has not been recorded. The ones in Durban has not been recorded. So I find that the information that has properly been provided, that the AG actually depended on or used as audit evidence, is actually not accurate. So maybe we should have at the proposed engagement with the department that we have actually a full understanding, and also all housing that took place for military veterans in the country, so they can have an accurate figure of what was actually achieved, not only by the department, but also in conjunction with the various local municipalities besides DHS. The other one is home rescues at 104, which is very good, and I think people highly appreciate it, but that number, I'm sure, is still open, and I've also had a word with the acting DG that it's always a risk if the quantum is greater than 78,000, which is the top-up, and then you're at risk if people don't pay the balance on a monthly basis to settle the debt, which means the investment made from the department as top-up can just be lost in the process and can be a waste of money unless precautions are taken. So the issue there is the 78,000 top-up, How is that actually managed? Is it only paid out to people that qualify, that the debt that is outstanding is less or equal to 78,000 and not more? That is the concern I have. Of course, we know the two cases, there were two litigation cases against the department where people demanded the full amount of 175,000 and there was a settlement of 165,000. We did ask if that policy has been put in the right place so that we avoid any further litigation, that the department has to be taken as the person responsible for the entire house that needs to be developed. At this moment, we depend on DHS to contribute the subsidy, and the department provides the top-up. So just to avoid any future litigation against the department, where two people have succeeded to get 165,000 from this department. The issue of bursaries, I think the acting DG is aware that, of course, we have discussed it. We have also complained that this particular benefit can, of course, override all other benefits because of the huge demand and the cost attached to it, and it can actually undermine the other benefits that needs to be dealt with. Now, we won't have a complete understanding unless the database is completed with all the dependents that qualify for bursaries. And consequently, there may have to be a huge increase in the budget of the department, and not like it is growing at the moment. At the moment, it's growing incrementally very, very slowly at a small percentage increase, and the demands are growing much more and faster than what the budget is growing. So there is a big concern that we're not going to do justice to our beneficiaries and those people that are deserving. So I've got a concern there, Honourable Chair, because from 4,000, it jumped to 7,146 bursaries, which is about 179% increase. That's a huge increase from what is planned. And we don't know what to expect with the additional members being registered on the database at the moment. Of course, this figure is contested. The audited figure says 6,193 bursaries were actually issued and not 7,146. This, of course, as Honourable Gamedi has indicated, that people that received bursaries were actually not taken from the database. And the question that arises then, if it's not taken from the database and they were given bursaries, isn't that an act of fraud? How did they get past that? Or is it definitely a mistake that was made? But if it's not a mistake and it was intentionally done, then certainly the individuals or officials are responsible then for committing fraud. We'd like to have an investigation and an answer to that question that was raised also by Honourable Gamedi. The issue of NSFAS, I'd like to know if we're going to limit it to NSFAS, because NSFAS is not the only institution that looks at the bursaries and dispensement of bursaries or scholarships for learners at institutions of higher learning. What about EduLoan? What about others that are also contributing? And can't we expand the number of suppliers of that service instead of limiting it to NSFAS? Can we look at the options that we have? And also, as indicated by the acting DG, there's currently problems experienced with NSFAS, and we cannot, because that, of course, impacts on the studies of the learners, the beneficiaries of the bursaries, and it will have a problem. If institutions refuse to accept them, it means that the studies will, of course, be impeded as well. The issue of the 50 graduates, I must say within the short period, that that's very good news for us, that people are coming out, and we know that is one of the key drivers to come out of the cycle of poverty for families. So we want to encourage that more and more people graduate through these programs and that they at least live a better quality of life than their parents have suffered in the past. So we are extremely happy with the progress that's being made. We'd just like to see more and more graduates coming out of the program. Concerning the healthcare, we know there's an issue, and that is a serious worry, is the accruals. Because accruals, whether it's NSFAS or whether it is with SAMS or whether it's with any other accounts that are outstanding, the 30-day accounts that are not paid, and anything accrues, those payments that are not being made at the end of the year's cash basis accounting, all the 93 million is being returned to Treasury, which means the next year's the following budget will have to pay for all the arrears and accruals that happen, which means less money for the current financial year. So certainly it's a big worry for us because it means less benefits for military veterans. And I think we need to jack up the officials. We need to jack up the audits, the audit committees, the internal controls, the credit and debit controls, and that we have to insist that officials perform for the sake of our military veterans. We cannot lose money and send it back to Treasury when it's supposed to further the interests of the military veterans. So I've got a big concern that money is actually lost in the system at the expense of the military vets. The issue of the burial support, also a very good performance. It exceeded the amount. Of course, that depends on death. It is not demand and supply. That is, it happens and you have to respond to it. And of course, we have discussed in the committee that it should happen in the same financial year. It should not be now done retrospectively. Now, is that a policy? Is that confirmed or approved as a policy? So the whole issue of policy and benefits need to be looked at. Have all those policies been approved or not? Because we have in that sight of the amendments made to those policies and the process that it had to follow. So all these policies have to be amended. And I think the two that the AG, of course, focused on was education support and, of course, the issue of education support and housing. So those are two ones, but the rest of the 9 benefits of the 11, we need to know exactly what is the policy positions on those ones. The issue not mentioned in the presentation today is, of course, the pension issue. How far are we there? Were the framework supposed to have been done? And what is the consideration of Treasury at this stage? Have all the things been resolved? At what stage is the pension, the single military pension for all military vets? The other one, of course, is transport, which we said was critical to finding jobs, to access for so many things. So I would like to know what progress has been made also with the transport, but there was no report on the transport in this presentation as well. The ones of compensation, AG has indicated, the acting DG has indicated that there is a provincial program going from province to province, and I do know there are problems that people have not been paid out and people have applied. But if it's being rolled out and people will receive, I'm not sure if the contingency funding, because I didn't see anything actually allocated for it. So I'd like to know how that is going to be dealt with and what the quantum is. So it's a bit of a concern for us. The issue of the 61 days to register and update the personal records of the military veterans. The department indicates they've come to 61 days and the target was 60 days, 2 months. According to the AG, it says they have not been able to verify it. So if it's been not verified and it's put actually as an achievement of a target or just an underachievement of a target, then I'm not sure about it because it's unreliable at this stage that we can actually use that as a yardstick for registration. My personal experience is that with all the applications that come to my desk and that I forward to Ms. Aletti van Eerden as the first point for registration, and then of course it moves on to the other officials, is that in many cases it takes longer than 2 months. Sometimes for months, sometimes for a year. And in other cases, of course, I think that has changed a bit. It took even longer than 1 year. And we know that the problem was not with the CPRs that exist, is that we have to verify the current status of the individuals, but the CPRs of certain of the non-statutory forces that was just currently updated. Those things have not, of course, come in the system that was settled, especially with the Azanla and with the APLA additions that took place. The other one is the invoices to be paid. I think we did discuss that, and Honorable Gamedi did mention it. And of course, the targets, the two targets that also is very elusive is the partnerships with private and state organs. There were previous achievements, but in the last financial year, that is now the annual report, we find that the target of 60 was set and actually nothing was achieved. So we need some clarity on exactly what is the position. Why is there actually no achievement at all? And similarly, on the continental and international agreements, This is not the first time we raise it. We've raised it a number of times. And there was a target of 30 set and actually zero achievement on that matter. The issue also is raised by the AG on the number of memorial sites. And I don't think there was a limited of two sites. Now, the AG says there's no reliable information or evidence that supports the existence of two memorial sites, additional sites. Can we have an understanding of how that is actually processed within the department so that there's no audit evidence to be found? The provincial offices, 9 coordinators are appointed in all the provinces, but all don't have offices that are furnished and capacitated. So only 3 offices officially are in place, and this has been the issue of access by military veterans to these offices. We know there's an underspending as well. Can we have also an idea of exactly why we have a delay when we've also asked that local government facilities must be used or accessed, and that those municipalities can be communicated? Many have indicated they are willing to assist and to open up an office for military veterans. Some have gone beyond that. They actually help military veterans and give them certain benefits. So I'd like to know, why are we still not in a position that we can have a fully-fledged office running in the provinces, and that this remains an underspending from the department side? The issue of adding additional benefits to the burial support is the tombstones. I have specifically sent to the department also copies of companies that deal in marble and granite that make tombstones at a very minimal cost. And the cost that currently incurred, which the Minister of Defense indicates, and of military veterans, that will have a huge impact or cost on HRN budget. Tombstones. I think we're losing sight of the core functions of this department and the most important needs of those who are living. Those who are dead, we must respect and we must also provide. But it cannot be that we overspend on one at the total detriment of others. And I think this needs to be sorted out sooner than later, that we do not overindulge and provide very, very expensive tombstones, which is not required. There can be a tombstone, it can be done, but not at the cost that's projected. And the minister says at a huge cost, and also on the HRN budget, in a foreword. Honourable Chair, I'd like to also just indicate that we'd like to see the move for the independence of this vote, of this department. And I think it's moving in the right direction, but still there are a number of policies not in place. And particularly that sub-program within administration has also been underspent. Now, apparently, as I read the document, it says the appeals board and the advisory council was also helping with policy. So I'd like to know, how is that coordinated? And why that environment is still lacking. It's lacking terribly, and we need to resolve it. Policies, plans, frameworks, strategies, regulations that need to be updated, to need to be designed, and it need to be amended. So I've got a concern with the MOUs also and the SLAs. We didn't have an update on that, and I think we need to know exactly what is the position. There's a number of documents that are ready, but it's not been approved. And I think we'd like to know exactly where we stand, because those are pillars of the benefits that need to be rolled out for the department. So I think it's very clear here that we have problems with database, MOUs, SLAs, with the policy environment. And of course, what also adds to the problem is the ICT infrastructure. Now we see there's also been a positive move that CETA's involved, Arms Corps involved to improve the performance. And Honourable Gamedi did pose a question on their also ICT problems that they have, that it shouldn't have an impact on the Department of Military Veterans. But ICT has also been considered one of the high risks, particularly the security of the ICT. Concerning the database, I've raised the issues, and registration and verification, the processes that are taking place there, that we need an update on it. The leadership, I think DG has referred himself to that matter. The AG has also made it very clear. We do appreciate the acting DG has joined the department last year only. And that the improvements that we've seen after his appointment, we appreciate that. But it's also time that we need to tighten up that that control, and that the SMS, the senior management and middle management, take up their responsibilities. That we execute it and give that support to the leadership of the organization so that we can resolve our problems and issues. If we don't do that, then of course we're heading the wrong way, and we will be qualified if we don't improve on the comments made by the AG. So from leadership, I think it's important that we acknowledge the leadership, but also demand from the leadership that they also perform their responsibility and put more pressure on management and what is expected. The internal audit and controls, I think we spoke about it, there's not enough capacity. That needs to be resolved as a matter of urgency, because that actually helps with the issue of risk management and of course the audit evidence, and can actually avoid situations before coming to the audit committee and to the AG's office. We also take make a note that we'd like to know the impact report and the outcomes of that impact report. Then also there's a number of issues of fraud and corruption that has been mentioned in the notes. We've seen these investigations that are taking place. A number of cases, I think about 6 cases. If we can have an update also on what is the position on that those investigations, and what is the consequence management of those who were found guilty. Okay, there's some cases that's pending. The liabilities also and contingencies is a serious worry, and I don't think the acting DG has indicated that about the Zeal Health as being the major case of 198 million. We'd like to know exactly how far is the matter. We're not going to discuss the merits of the case. If it's sub judice, it's in the courts, that is one thing. But just to tell us where are we? We have no idea exactly of where the case is and the department is on that matter. And if this matter has also been raised with Treasury, so that, I mean, sure, Treasury is aware of it, but in the event that something happens, how does the department actually mitigate? What do they do? The issue also of debt recovery, there's a number of old debts and debts that are outstanding. We'd like to know. I think the internal debt has been dealt with by the department. The external debt has been put on the shoulders of the accounting officer of the acting DG to deal with. Coming to the SEM and procurement, I think Honourable Gamedi has alluded to that. But there's a number of cases, according to the notes we have, we've seen a number of the procurement that didn't follow procedure. In terms of competitive bids, which is a problem, which is irregular, and if it's more than 500,000, then of course got huge implications. What has happened to those investigations? And can we have an update on that? And of course, the major problem within SEM and procurement is actually the capacity that exists in that department. I do know there's been communication with Treasury to upgrade or upskill the individuals working within that particular section. So if we can have an update on that. The acting DG also indicated that they've worked on an asset register. However, it's not completed yet. If we can just have an update on the asset register as well. The communication and marketing strategy, which is our high impact, we know that Mr. Mamusi is responsible for that particular one. We've seen the rollout to the various provinces, the roadshows that have taken place. I'd like to know if, in terms of the strategy, which is rolled out at 50%, when are we going to achieve the 100%? And how far will it stretch to the rural areas? At this moment, we've covered all the major cities and towns in the country. It's been all over. I'd like to know the specific strategy that deals with the rural areas for this particular section. The others are clarity, Honourable Chair. On the issue of consultants, according to the report, no consultants were used. However, contractors and business advice, those were used. Those are outserviced. If we can have an idea what it actually entailed. And then, of course, always our major worry is travel and subsistence. And in that regard, there was also officials and military veterans that did not cancel their bookings. And that, of course, consequences. Debt were incurred. I think some individuals are being pursued to repay debt. But like an update on why these things happen and why is it not monitored, and How do we confirm when we make these bookings that individuals will actually use it? Is there a confirmation, and is there a form that people sign for responsibility, because it's money that's paid out by the department for officials and for military vets? The catering and entertainment, I've seen in many instances that's been reduced, which is, of course, commendable. And I'd like to know if it's just restricted, how the department is actually restricted, because it's been reduced in a number of instances. The disciplinary cases, Honourable Chair, according to the report, this is the contradiction we have. On page 62, that's indicated there's no cases. Then we got on page 58, there's one case of dismissal. Then we got on page 67, one case of dismissal and four of withdrawal. So there are five cases. And it also, but as I say, on page 62, it says there's no, not applicable, at the top of the page. Okay, so just some clarity on that, please. And then, of course, consequence management. In a number of cases, no action were taken. I'd like to know when investigations were done, so that we get. The worry that I also have with the HR, again, we've got a high turnover, 60%. And the issue is the total number, according to the salary band, there's 240 individuals on the roll. However, the department reports only 207, 133 plus 74 additional members. But we find on the salary band, there's actually 240 listed. So I've got a problem with the figures that are being given, because that means then we have additional people besides the 74 people. Now, I've looked at also the figures that we have for the, there's also in the notes, the average number of employees is at 231. Okay, that's in the notes at the back. Okay, then we've got the issue, I've calculated also the employment equity on the demographics. We stand at Africans at about 93%, EE. We're looking at the whites at 4.5%, look at colors at 1.5%, and Indians at under 1%. Now, I haven't seen any response to that. That is contrary to the demographics of national government itself. So can we have some explanation of that? That's on page 59. The figures that are given also on the vacancies, I think there's two figures on page 52 and 54, which is not congruent. It is actually contradictory. So if those corrections can also be made. 52 and 54 is contradictory. Okay. I haven't also heard anything on the skills audit that took place, but according to the interventions, 102 employees were actually audited. That's my understanding of it, unless I'm wrong. However, when we look at the audit that takes place, then we find that there's people that qualify for learnerships and people that qualify, 27 and 30 for short courses and upskilling. However, the 30 jumps immediately to a much bigger number, contrary to what is identified by the department. So we find the number of, there's nobody takes advantage of the learnerships, but most people jump in, 130, I think. So it increases automatically almost by 100. So how is that done when there's a skills audit, identification of the needs to upgrade individuals within the department, and then suddenly find the number that has been identified as compound, as increases tremendously? Because it means that the cost of the courses, of course, adds, and of course it will impact on the budget. And we do know there was also an underspending in terms of the training that's been given at 43% instead of what's required by the department. The issue that I want to raise also is the appeals board, the advisory council in SANVA. What is the budget for SANVA? Is it still 6 million? And the appeals board and advisory council, are they fully capacitated? I see they are contributing and helping now in the last 2 years. And do we have a report that has been submitted actually by SANVA to the minister, because we haven't seen a report to date? So I'd just like to know what is, because they are very important organs within the institution and in the reporting, and of course addressing the issues of the benefits of the military veterans. And also, if those avenues have been exhausted by certain military veterans, were there any complaints from the military Umbud or from the Human Rights Commission? Was there any mention, anybody have resorted to that after exhausting the current recourse that they have within the department? The issue also, I would like to know, on page 58, that's 58 and 57, we see that staff left, and the reason for them leaving is the expiry of contracts. At the beginning of 2016 financial year, 17 financial, 2016-17 financial year, I see there's 74 contracts that expired. Now, those are 74 contracts that we actually employ as additional people. Can the department just explain why we said expired? Was it renewed and expired, and or just to give an explanation of that? It was originally 78, and 4 people resigned or left, they didn't renew, and 74 remained. So it says the expiry, if we look at that particular page. Okay, the average number of employees is on 231, page 231, and the expiry is on page 58 and 57. Now, the acting DG, Honorable Chair, has indicated that 27 graduates will come into the department as interns. Will those be additional staff? Basically, if you take on the interns, then it will be additional. So it won't fall under the contracts. So just to confirm that, and of course it is to try and bring in also skills and expertise and people that can be groomed to possibly then work in the future for the department. The next page, Honorable Chair, deals with the issue of the annual financial statements. I think a number of issues were acknowledged. We want to say that we appreciate the corrections that were made, and of course the figures of revenues that was incorrect, misclassification, verification that had to be done, that's been improved, but we do still know that the predetermined objectives, the information is still not reliable, and that needs to be, of course, refined much more. I'd just like to know from the irregular expenditure, it was the delegations were signed on the 12th of August 2016, and the acting DG had to condone about 90 million of the 106 million in irregular expenditure. Can the acting DG just give us an idea of the condonement, because there wasn't a DG in place? The CFO came late on board. How were the delegations actually executed? So, and of course, when it's condoned, there must be good reason why it's condoned. So there remains a balance of the 16 million, and of the previous year, we know there's about 66 million that is still irregular. Of course, that's inherited, that needs to be dealt with posthumously, unfortunately, by our acting DG. The investigations, I've indicated the 6 cases, would like it covers a huge amount as well, some into the millions. And, of course, we just like to know about those investigations for non-compliance with procurement, etc., and with SEM, financial delegations, etc. The one of financial delegations, I know that is condoned, the 90 million. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure at 3.2 million. And, of course, that comes from the previous year and the year under discussion that we have. So that amounts to 3.2, and that were for those bookings, for logos, for catering, for dental invoice. The dental invoice apparently is the highest, 853,000 for a military veteran that is being investigated. I'd like to know what was done with the person for dental, to remove a tooth or to, I don't know what to do. 853 is a lot to put in your mouth. So if we can have just an idea of what the problem is with the teeth on that one. I want to congratulate the department. Most of the issues that were in the department were coming on for 4 years almost, and we see now a serious shift, and I want to congratulate the department for that. So we don't want to say something is endemic or systemic. We have to make the break, and that's important, and I think everybody must give that support to one another and to the leadership so that we can get ahead. Okay, the issue of the material predetermined, I say the SMART principle, and I think that's a challenge for all departments. I think we just have to get down to it and get to grips with it, what is required by the National Treasury, and that we write it in a way that is very simple and that it follows the SMART principle. It's measurable, it's reliable, etc., that we put it down in that way. Concerning the issue of the finances, Honourable Chair, I think this we raised also of the underspending in a number of departments. In fact, underspending is throughout all the programs. Of course, the major shift that has happened is the increase that was taken from the economic empowerment and what we get from what we call the EMS has been shifted to SAS and the administration. Of course, we see administration use increase, and we understand with the number of additional people that needs to be paid, there has to be an increase. And because the other sub-programs, we've seen underspending when it comes to policy monitoring valuation, and we see the increase happen at corporate services, and corporate services essentially deals with HR. So the money has gone largely into HR that has been shifted. Okay. So the issue that arises from our perspective, I think, as a committee, is that when you find targets at 67% or 60% or 50% compared to what has been spent in the budget, of course, we know it's almost 100% percent expenditure when it comes to Program 1 in terms of the administration. People are all paid compensation of employees. But the performance, if we see that, the spending 60% to 77% in Program 2, 50% of targets, and 82%, of course, budget spent. So it's always how do you balance when your targets are not achieved. So we've read also the notes on the challenges and how the department intends to deal with the challenges, but I said we will have to interrogate that more robustly so that we actually deal with the problem. The issue that I want to raise, Honourable Chair, is also the note mentioned by the Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. He says on page 16 that the department has assisted the MK, Military Veterans Association, to commemorate its 55th year. Now, I'd like to know where does this fit into our budget arrangements? Is that not under SANVA? If it's under SANVA, it is then, of course, the part of their budget. And if it is for MK, what is it also done for other military veterans associations? We just need to clarity on that because this is the, a comment made by the Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. On page 26, I don't know why Acting DJ just included an organogram of 2010. There's an old diagram in, and some of the information is actually not correct on the diagram. That's on page 26. We are looking forward to the new diagram, draft diagram at least, Honourable DG, that we can interrogate. I think that is what we're looking forward to and what is anticipated in terms of the HR that's required to run this department effectively. And, of course, it has to be approved through the necessary other departments. So the organogram of the organization that is envisaged. The other mistakes I've seen is on page 62, where it's 2 and a line. It's supposed to be 20. That's addition. Page 55, it's 62, yeah. There's a note at the bottom. Just add up the total. I think it's a printing error. It's 2 and a hyphen instead of 2 and a 0. And then page 55, it's 8. If you calculate it, it's 10. So if you just run down the figures, page 64 and page 65 similarly. So you add up the totals, and it's not 1, it's 3. 1, 2, 3, 1, 1, 1, 1, 3, and then it gives the average as well. So those are some of the things I picked up in the reading. Honourable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Isao. I think from your input and the input of Honourable Gameda, you should have covered everything for the department to be a follow-up. Leave the comments out, you note them, and then answer the questions. Can you switch off, Honourable?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the praises from the Honourable Members and also for the difficult questions that have been raised. Those are much appreciated. Chair, what I think I should do is I should answer some of the questions and then I'll ask my team to answer those which require more detail and expertise. In terms of education support, the message, the question that both Honourable Gamedi and Asal raised around beneficiaries who were not on the database, I'll leave that for Acting DDG Musi to answer. The issue of IT that Honourable Gamedi raised, we are not actually getting support from Arms Corps in terms of IT at the moment. We're working with CETA. As per the discussions, I think it was in March when we were here, we have implemented that project. So CETA is busy with the development of the project. That's the database and the benefits management system linked to it. And we should be seeing some of the initial fruits during this month, but the project is due to be finished by the end of the year, and then we'd have to pilot it and implement it. I think that's going to immediately, we have that, if it's developed to specification, it should make a big difference to the workflow in the department. We've also busy with the verification of the database. DDSI has been assisting us with that. They've done some of the desktop analysis around that. However, it's clear to me that some of the work on the verification of the database cannot be done just by like a kind of desktop analysis. Okay, so what is required is to look at the people who were added to the database after the CPRs were adopted and to re-verify them. So I'm busy planning that process and an approach to dealing with that, as per our previous discussions here. In terms of the regulations on education support, I think colleagues know, and the AG has raised this issue, that one of the areas which is not covered in the regulations at the moment is education support. I think that was a mistake and or oversight of the department when the regulations were drawn up. But we've instructed CES to work on a regulation in that regard. And then I think colleagues know, we've reported previously, we had drawn up an education policy. When we wanted to implement the policy, we were requested to do more consultation. We've resent the policy for that consultation. We've paid for 4 meetings where the advisory board, the advisory council, and SANVA would interrogate that and the housing policy. We are waiting from the Advisory Council for the signed-off comments on that. This is a matter of huge urgency because we cannot go in to processing the applications that closed for education support on the 30th of September without having a clear policy in that regard. My understanding in my engagements with National Treasury and with AGSA is that both bodies will not accept processing of applications without implementation of the policy. So we urgently requiring that from the Advisory Council. I think still that the issue that we faced with in particular is around the means test and the unhappiness from some of our stakeholders with regard to the department implementing the Military Veterans Act, which requires the means test. So that's at the crux of issues, but we are seized with this matter. We've been engaging, as I say, with the Advisory Council, and we even discussed it yesterday as the management, and we've taken some further decisions in that regard. Let me say more generally with regard to policy is that we're trying to ensure that we have policies for all the benefits and other things we're doing. We've also taken steps
around other policies to regularize things and to move from policy guidelines to proper adopted policies which have been consulted with the stakeholders. On the issues of the payment in 30 days, CFO will say more about that. But let me say that the main problems in payments within 30 days are not really with SMMEs. They're actually with the travel agent largely and the phone contracts, and those are not small companies, those are big companies. But I think there's more work to be done on in terms of that. In terms of business and skills, DDG Mafu will respond on those issues. Let me just say, in terms of MOUs, one of the issues we've been dealing with, actually more in this year, but I think it relates to the issues you're raising on the previous year, is the targets that have been set historically by the department, which we then report on in terms of performance management. Some of the targets have not been useful as management tools, and they've created anomalies. For instance, on MOUs, there was a target to sign 60 MOUs. But the question I was asking is, if we were to sign 60 MOUs, how will that help us with our service delivery strategy? Is there some alignment between the 60 MOUs that we set to sign to improving service delivery in different areas? And unfortunately, there wasn't that alignment. So the question we've looked at is, what is our strategy with signing MOUs? I can also approach it in a different way. I have files of the MOUs. But most of those MOUs don't help us to deal with the key issues that we're meant to deliver on, whether it's delivering education, support, or skills training, etc., etc. It seems to me it was more a random process of just making partnerships without a strategy. So that issue, we've changed the performance indicators regarding signing of MOUs. And we've also asked branch ESM to look at a strategy for signing MOUs so that the officials that are responsible for that have a guidance. We need an MOU in this area so we can deliver specifically this benefit, and it is part of our strategy and program of the department. That also relates to the issue that was raised about continental and international agreements. Because again, we can go around signing agreements with all kinds of institutions internationally, but they might not help us with actual delivery. So that's an issue we've been dealing with. The issue of the letters and the support to businesses, DDG will deal with. In terms of training and skills development, I want to get this right. The correct number for training and skills development is 1908. Yeah, that's the correct number. What happened is that the first evidence that we presented was to present evidence for 2,400 opportunities. But when that was processed and audited by the AG, it became clear that that was not correct. So there were errors made there, and the correct number is 1908. However, that number is also, there's a mistake in the booklet on page 31. That number there, that's in the top right of page 31, of 1849. Was a mistake. It's a mistake in the printed booklet. The correct number is 1908. Then The issue of the contradiction between what the DM wrote and what's in the report, I think the DDG will also relate to that. SRD, Mr. Musi can respond on that. The problem with SRD has been that it was implemented on the basis of a ministerial instruction. It's not one of the benefits listed in the Act. Also, there were not proper procedures in place. During last year, the actual payment procedure changed. Initially, it was being done by social development. Then it shifted to ABSA. Now we've shifted it in-house. All of that has created problems in terms of providing the benefit. Clearly, there's a huge demand for this benefit. There are many military veterans that don't even have a basic income. So they are meant to be covered by this benefit. Okay. However, the terms of the benefit come out of the policy of social development. We're basically borrowing, as I say, it's not in the Act. We don't have our own policy for that. So we're borrowing their policy based on the MOU that we have with them. And what we've agreed is we need to sort out the policy ourselves, have our own policy, and we need to deal with a difficult question. And the main difficult question with SRD, besides sorting out our ability to pay it on time internally, the main problem is that in terms of the policy, this benefit is under social development is only available for 6 months, 3 months, sorry. And then in our guidelines, we've extended to 6 months and 12 months. Now we need to have a process to terminate the benefit for people who still require the benefit, which creates a lot of problem. So that's the process we're looking at. What we've also discussed is that everyone who gets SRD needs to also get skills training so we can make them able to sustain themselves and create their own sustainable income. So that integration internally in the department also needs to take place. Because currently the benefit is paid, SRD is paid from CES, but the training is under ESM, so there has to be internal coordination around doing that. So that's also what we're looking at. It really is a concern to us that, by and large, those who are receiving the benefit really require the benefit, and if we were to terminate it, it's going to create serious problems, social problems. The housing issue, I think Mr. Musi will respond on that one. Let me say, however, that when it comes to bond rescues, we are very firm on this issue. We're implementing the regulation as the regulation is written. Now, the crux of the regulation is that the payment that is made by the department to pay off the mortgage must terminate the mortgage. In other words, the outstanding amount on the bond can't be more than 188,000. That's the figure we're using at the moment in total. So we can only pay off bonds that are less than 188 at the moment. And that does create tension between military veterans and ourselves, but that's what we're doing at present. And that, to my mind, falls within the intention and the meaning of the regulation. Okay. As I said, we've drafted a housing policy, we've submitted it for consultation, we're waiting the response to that. My concern is the long time that it takes for us to get a formal response on the consultations. Then the bursaries, which is basically education support, this remains a huge problem. Even if we were just to continue supporting those, let me first say the problem is created by the huge increase in applications for the support, plus the fact that we did not have a policy to regulate the support, and we know in the financial year that we're discussing, 16-17, we had to engage with National Treasury to shift money to cover that. Okay. National Treasury has raised certain conditions for going forward. The key ones are implementation of the policy, proper policy in place. Second one, implementation of the means test. Now, those are the contentious issues with our stakeholders, which we're trying to resolve now. However, we really faced with the situation that given the massive increase in that previous year and also the budgeting process for this year, we don't have the money to even cover those that we approved last year that would continue into this year, let alone the new applicants. So that's something we're trying to deal with urgently at the moment. As this matter is highlighted for in the MTEF process with National Treasury, so it's highlighted as a request from the department, and also it's been adopted by the cluster of departments that we go through the MTEF process for. So we've put that, highlighted it there, but as I say, we've got a responsibility to show certain things, the policy and the means test, so that we can then engage further. Maybe, Chairperson, I suppose my request to the committee is the committee, and I've made this request previously as well, that the committee help with the engagement with our stakeholders, in particular military veterans associations, so that the stakeholders understand that Parliament adopted law, the Military Veterans Act, and did not make the provisions of the Act by mistake. Because there's a feeling out there that somehow Parliament put the means test in, but it didn't really intend the means test to be implemented. Again. I'm saying there's a feeling out there amongst the military veterans community that Parliament put the means test in the Act, but didn't really have an intention of implementing the means test. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying, that somehow, I don't know, that the means test doesn't have the weight it should have in the law.
But what do you want? What intervention would you want from the committee?
I think the committee would really help if it can engage our stakeholders, SANWA, Advisory Council, other militaries, all structures, that Parliament knew what it was doing when it put the means test in, and that the committee stands by what's in the Act. Because what's happening now is we are, as a department, saying we have to abide by the Act. The means test is in the Act. Therefore, we intend, and we've written the policy in a way that it allows us to implement the means test. But the stakeholders don't want the means test. And all I can say is it's in the Act. Parliament intended it to be implemented. But it would help if you could reinforce that.
No. I don't think Parliament should get involved in that. Parliament has made the legislation. That is means that what I understand is that the concept of means test is not well explained to the stakeholders. As Honorable Isao says, they see it as an impediment. And it's not an impediment. It's a way of also protecting them as military veterans, because if you don't have that, you may have everybody. It can be free for all. They must also understand it along those lines. Or to be a military veteran itself is a means test. You see, they must understand it in that way. Now you must go out when in your road shows. I think that is what you should be doing. Thank you.
Then in terms of housing,
Mr. Musi will also come in on that, but I just wanted to say, Honorable S.L. raised that there were some houses that are not recorded, which were built. We are aware of those issues, but there has to be a process between DMV and the provincial departments of human settlements to record houses for that financial year. So basically, the delivery also needs to be related to expenditure. So in the cases you mentioned, DMV did not spend money on those houses. Therefore, it cannot be recorded as an achievement on our, in our regard. Some of the cases, there are some disputes, and we're engaging in that regard. But, yeah, so we can't just because a province or a municipality says these houses are built for military veterans, doesn't mean that that is in terms of our program, in terms of our policy, and that we paid money for them, which would then be the requirements for us to claim delivery of those houses. So we need to sort those things out before we claim them. But as I say, we're aware of them. Okay. All right. The ENSFAS problem, we are really seized with this issue. Up until now, ENSFAS has been dealing with higher education payments, and we've either been paying for basic education, been paying ourselves directly to the service providers. We have used EduLoan Fundi, it's changed its name halfway, to make some payments, and we're looking at whether we need to expand that. Okay. Those are not just employing a company to make the payments doesn't resolve many of the problems that we have. We still need to give them a list, a verified list of who the payments need to be made to. We need to check all of that data. So it's not a golden bullet in resolving the issue. It can help, but we've also got to have our processes in place and our approvals in place. The pension and transport, Mr. Musi will respond to. The issue of the database, I think I've dealt with that. The partnerships, I've dealt with that. The memorial sites and the evidence on the two sites, DDG Mafu will respond on that. Also the provincial offices. Issue of policies, I think I've responded on that. On the ICT and the database, I've responded on that. Internal audit and controls, this is an area we have been seized with, and even the whole issue of strengthening our monitoring and evaluation separate from internal audit is also something we've been discussing. Fraud and corruption and the six cases, CFO can respond on that. The procedures and the investigations into SCM, he also needs to respond on that. Let me just say something on the asset register. Essentially, the asset register has been the biggest issue with regard to getting the unqualified audit. And we took a number of steps to get assistance, in particular from DOD, to finalize the asset register and the outstanding issues on the asset register. Unfortunately, that process itself didn't give us much comfort. And there were many hiccups between the team that was drawing up the asset register and ourselves. And in the end, when we had to submit the financial statement, we still didn't have a final report from that team, even though it was expected in April. So basically, the CFO, with a few of his officials, were forced to then reconstruct the asset register in the period after when the financial statements were submitted.
And they were able to do that to the extent that they gave confidence to the AG in that regard, which I think is a major achievement. Okay. And it took really serious effort on his behalf to get to that situation. Okay. But it wasn't ideal. So now what we're busy with is creating the in-house capacity to do the to maintain the asset register. We have the asset register. The question is maintaining it on a monthly basis. So if someone takes a chair out of my office, it needs to be recorded in that month, not found at the end of the year. And that's what CFO is busy doing at the moment. So as much as we want to thank DOD, etc., from the assistance, for the assistance they gave, it was really a very difficult process. But we now over the hurdle in that we have an asset register that the AG accepts. And the key part also of that asset register, besides the maintenance, was dealing with the opening balances. Because unfortunately, when the department was established, and especially assets were moved to the department, there were not proper controls in place. Okay. So we've now been able to establish the assets, their values. The question we need to do is just deal with accounting for where those assets are now from the establishment. We need to write off some of those assets in a proper way in consultation with the Accountant General. And CFO is busy with that. To my mind, it's a huge achievement that we've been able to deal with that. The issue of communication, I think Mr. Musi will respond. On the issues of discipline and the structure, I'm going to ask General Marquez, is DDG responsible to respond to the issues that were raised, including the skills audit and training. The Appeals Board, Advisory Council and SANVA, we know that there are still outstanding issues from the SANVA NGC, which we're trying to deal with ASAP. I'm hoping that in the next week or so we will have, I've referred the matter to the Appeals Board, so I'm hoping we will have a written final report from the Appeals Board on that issue, and I can take a decision about SANVA and the NGC. It has led to SANVA not functioning as it should since the NGC, basically. In terms of the budgets for those bodies, CFO will respond. And then I've raised again with SANVA last week the need for them to submit the report to the Minister as per the Act. I don't think they've done it, but it's a report to the Minister, so I'm only probably just a CC at the bottom of that if it does come. I know for the previous year they did submit a report after it had been raised with them. Complaints from the Human Rights Commission. There have been a number of complaints which we dealt with, mainly about provision of housing to military veterans. But I think all those matters have been closed, as far as I know, with the Human Rights Commission. The military ombud is not really part of the governance structures of the department, but there are some issues that do get referred to him. And I've had a meeting with him where we've agreed on procedures, and there's also an MOU being finalized with the military ombud. But the main area for appealing of decisions of the department is the Appeals Board. And they're meeting regularly and they're processing appeals. Condonement of irregular expenditure, I'm going to leave that, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, to the CFO to explain. The issue of assisting MKMVA, as per all the Military Veterans Association, that assistance is done in terms of requests made by SANVA. So in the case of the 55th anniversary, MKMVA wrote a letter to SANVA saying they were having this event and requesting the support of SANVA for the event so that SANVA can request the department to do that. And then Sunva then wrote a letter to the department requesting department to support the event, and it's on that basis the department then supported the event. So maybe I think the DM might have just short-circuited the explanation in the introduction, but it's all done in that way, and DG Mafu is dealing with those issues. Check if the other officials can then
tell me, are you encountering any challenges in terms of your HRD plan, human resource development plan? Because I see in the report is that the reports are not compliant, are not reliable, are not accurate. Is it a question of capacity or what is it?
On
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
The other matter is on the bazaaries. You're saying that there are people who are not on the database who are benefiting. Is it the same as you put in people who are ineligible? So that we need to be clear as to whether it's fraud or it's just mill administration. Are they legitimate or not? I think you need to clarify us on that one.
The bottom line for the department is that everyone who benefits from DMV must be on the database, both veterans and their dependents. So if there are cases where that's not happening, then it needs to be investigated and then action taken in that regard. I think Mr. Musi can talk about the detail about those areas.
Thank you.
You can go on.
Thank you, Chair, and the members. There were a few issues that have been referred to.
General, how do you switch that off? Do you still need that thing that is blinding me? And the acting DG, I never had him. Nobody's pitying me. I just hope it's not an X-ray. It's just there. Okay. Thank you.
Our apologies for that. Chair. In relation to the question that you were just asking about the HR capacity, I think what one has to do is just to encapsulate this whole issue in relation to how the department is currently engaged with the restructuring. And I think out of that environment, then it will be a better position. The department, once we have finished with this particular exercise, we would be in a better position to say, in this environment, we are now properly capacitated or not, and all the gaps that need to be filled would have been filled. Because currently we have an HR director, two deputy directors, but when you look at the whole gamut of HR, it's just not there, those two, plus the director. There was an issue that was raised on the skills audit. Would request that...
Before you go on, please, do you want to tell me that you cannot do the skills needs analysis now?
I was going to talk to
you. Okay.
There is a report which had already been worked on through the office of the DG. We will request that it be sent through so that then it can be able to talk to all the other issues that were raised by Honorable Issa, as well as for the MPET report, the 1.6, we would ensure that those are sent through into this into the committee's requirements. And then there was an issue on which was spoken to on the amendment to the regulations. I think what I'm certain that, I mean, we were informed much earlier. The amendment even to the Act itself, I mean, I think Mr. Ozinski can talk to it. We have gone very far with that documentation, and I think we would be ready now for gazetting, because once we have done that, then we'll be able to even talk. Yes, we can do the amendment to the regulations, but they must talk to the Act itself. And then there was the issue of disciplinary cases in terms of the report itself. The investigations, I think the CFO is will be dealing with that. The issue of you did speak to the 33 members from the report itself, and I think those were just the issues of misinterpretation. We do have members that are detached from the Department of Defense, and I'm not sure how they were captured wronged, that I mean they are on the payroll of the department, but we'll finish the exact details of these 33 detached members from the Department of Defense. I'm not sure, sir, if there's any others that I hadn't captured there from what had been said, because now I see they've been redelegated to. But I think let's maybe I will talk to assist the DDG ESM when it comes to the issue of the provincial offices that we have not yet received. The committee has requested from time to time that, I mean, it must be updated, and I know that to an extent there was a meeting that was supposed to have been scheduled between the National Department of Public Works and ourselves to yourselves. If this can be speeded up, because the department on its own has tried to hold a bilateral, I think now it's over a year with the Department of Public Works without success, and this is one of the things that is steaming. The applications are sitting there, but the movement within Public Works itself is a bit on the slow side, and we are making an appeal as well to the committee to ensure that that meeting does take place, as has happened with the other state departments. Thank you.
Before you go on, Honorable Issa.
Honorable Chair, I just want to be clear that the additional members, when we speak about the 240 on the salary band, generally if somebody is seconded from a department, they're still paid by that department. So Department of Defense, when we say they're on a salary band, it doesn't mean that they're actually paid by DMV. But at all, that note wasn't added in, so we didn't know where the 33 went missing.
That was the explanation that I was giving, apparently. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Members and colleagues. Looks like the biggest plate is with me, and I'm not sure if the stomach to swallow all of it. But I give it my best shot, because I think the DG has laid a foundation on most of the issues in terms of where we are. On the issues under my purview is education, SRD, housing, transport, pension, and perhaps lastly, database, and then lastly, communication. And all of them, DG has touched on them. I'll just give emphasis on each one of them. And in all of them, they relate to two categories: policy, regulatory regime, and procedure, and then programmatic issues, which means actual programs and how far they are in the challenges faced. Those are two categories on each element. With regard to education, the DG has said, and we are working on it, and hopefully before the end of this quarter, the regulation that has been a missing link is being worked on, and hopefully we'll conclude that process in this quarter, because it is creating a lot of other problematic challenges emanating from lack of regulation. On the policy on education, consultations have taken far too long, but at least now we have comfort that as late as Thursday and Friday last week, we had a workshop with all the entities under the minister, which included Appeals Board, SANVA, which have given us preliminary opinions on their approach to the education matter, including the much contested issue of means test, will be consolidating their input. Hopefully this process will be completed also this month in terms of policy that brings certainty on administration of education. The third area relating to education is programmatic. We noted, Honorable Kamed, that indeed there are problems with regard to people who are not supposed to benefit and seemed to have benefited. I want to assure the committee that we are dealing with the matter, we're investigating it. The margin of error is not significant. It is less than 5%, I can assure you. However, 1% is 1% too many. So we do not want to have any margin of error. In dealing with the matter, we're soliciting also both internal investigations as to how it happened so that you can see whether it's administrative negligence or lack of capacity which you must deal with. On the other hand, if it is fraud, we're also soliciting the support of law enforcement agencies because we cannot, and I think we're going to be intolerant if at all there's fraud of money meant for military veterans being used by wrong people for wrong reasons. You can assure Parliament will keep you updated on this one. The overarching issue that pertains to education is about mismatch between supply and demand. I think you've correctly said, Honorable Sam. The reality is that now that we profile this benefit, many, many veterans and their dependents are coming on board. And the current budget structure and allocation is proving us wanting. We want to implore Parliament to begin to engage this matter with National Treasury. It's a reality that seeks to say to us, we have a duty to honor the constitutional obligation of making sure that, like all South Africans, military veterans are not deprived of quality education as a constitutional right. On the other hand, the resources don't permit us to be able to. Let me show you the latest statistics that I got in the office now, because we're now processing new applications. If you allow me to indulge, so that you understand that the problem is not diminishing, but becoming very serious, because I asked the team to get us the latest. You will recall that we closed the applications on the 30th of September. We're now looking at how many applications. As we speak today, both continuing and non-continuing at basic and higher education is 9,919. What we reported, which was an area of saying 7,146 are getting assistance. If indeed the figure is increasing from there, it's sitting at over 2,000 more. It may well be that it is not necessarily only those that are increasing in that element. It's a matter we're processing. Hopefully we'll finish processing before end of November so that we can be ready to advise. So it's a serious matter. Do we allow new applications? If we don't, we're doomed. If we do, we're also doomed. It's a matter that's far beyond the department. It requires advocacy at another level and government to look at how can we, as all spheres of government, I must indicate that we're getting some relief with the initial initiatives we're taking. In Mpumalanga, I'm sure the TDG will speak more. In this area, because we said it's not sustainable, our budget limitations are limiting us to provide this basic constitutional right to veterans and their kids. And the government of Mpumalanga is saying it can absorb some of the pressures. If we can have that across 9 provinces, across all municipalities, 278 of them in the country, the pressure can go down. And that's a route we want to take within intergovernmental relations framework. But also the area is also requiring that all South Africans, including the private sector, ought to come to the party to deal with ensuring that military veterans are not disadvantaged in getting education. So it's a broader issue than just issues. But of course, we have realized that we need to tighten policy implementation. And that's the area that's going to make sure we have controls such that we do not have excesses within our budget. You correctly said that there is a correlation between a reliable, secure database with how we provide any benefit, including education. And that area, therefore, is being dealt with insofar as creating a reliable database, because people can filter into the system if the database is unreliable. And we're working on that. I think the DG has pronounced on it. So this is CETA support, DDSI support, but also internally as well, we're looking at our IT systems being checked up. With education as well, the issue of NSFAS and other agencies we depend on. We've engaged with NSFAS and our engagements are continuous. We are actually working on a steering committee to begin to look at tightening how we work. I'm sure you would know that NSFAS is a far bigger problem than just DMV. And to that extent, we want to minimize risk based on the challenges they have and not carry over their risk on our side. And equally so other agencies. But to me and to us, the internal debate in the department, we must move towards building internal capacity to manage these benefits ourselves. Then we can actually minimize any risk and we can take mitigation strategies that people can be accountable for. That, to me, is a medium to long-term solution. But at the moment, we're still reliant on them and we're tightening how we can, depending on them, we can better deliver this service. The SRD, I think the DG has covered us. It's an area that we dealt with because there was a need. And by ministerial directive, we then had to say, what do we do with the most destitute who can't even afford anything? There's no income, there's nothing. And people, we made to have a choice. Do they die of poverty or do we make an interim arrangement whilst we do not necessarily have the requisite resources as well as the policies and procedures? So we literally borrowed from social development. I think DG has covered it. But we're reviewing that process. It's not sustainable. We've budgeted over 60 million rands on this one. And I can tell the members that at the moment we're supporting over 2,200. The actual applications that we have are over 5,000. That tells you that the people who feel that their livelihood is dependent on how we help them to have some little income of 1,200 is quite significant. We've employed recently, you'd recall, members, we promised that we'll be employing social workers to do assessments. When we're implementing this, we're more pragmatic, guided by a policy guideline that we borrowed elements from social development. But we need policy certainty. Our social workers are doing assessments now. I think we'll better be able to actually manage how we phase in, phase out people. I can tell you that now, because of the demand and the lack of integrated approach towards beneficiary support, has made people go far beyond the 6 months we had targeted. There's many now who are making a decision. Should we take them out? If we do, what do we mean? They're almost a year now in the system, and they're anxious because the period has ended. The reality is they don't have employment. The reality is they don't have gainful income. So we are persuaded by empirical data and experience that we're going to make sure that when we have a system where if, like in social development, if you get social relief, how do you migrate to other benefits that are more sustainable and budgeted for? And that's the area of thinking and discussion we're having. Quite clearly, there has to be dependence of CES delivery with ESM for job creation as well as business support so that people can migrate properly from SRD. And it's an area that's still new because of the nature of the program. We hope to actually find a solution, a lasting solution. In fact, tomorrow we have a meeting to discuss specifically that as executive of the department. Housing. It has been raised, the policy has been consulted. Last week, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday, we had a workshop with our other entities under the minister. Hopefully, then also will incorporate their inputs into the housing policy. Members will recall that there were elements in the housing policy that needed to be tightened up, including the regulations around bond rescue, around refurbishments, etc., which means how we use top up optimally to be able to provide decent housing. That is on course, and hopefully, the policy guideline will also help us to manage this effectively. I must acknowledge that the record of those houses that were provided to military veterans is an area that both DHS and ourselves have acknowledged. There are many veterans who got RDP houses prior to the actual department existing, let alone after the department. But those records are not properly, so that you understand which interventions are required because some don't need the top-up houses of 50 square meters. They need enhancement of the houses they have got or they've built for themselves. Mm-hmm. We're quantifying that. We have a task team at a national level established by the minister. We also have the committee of officials that are actually supporting that process. We are beginning to interact with provinces, and I think we have a better sense now. I recently, on behalf of the department, visited the Free State. We were also in Mpumalanga and other areas, and I think we have better interaction now to better quantify those areas. We have set a target of 1,200 this year. The pace at which various provinces are moving on that one is not the same. There are some that are moving fast, some are moving slow, but we're monitoring closely. Interaction with DHS is much more now, better than before, and coordination is better. We will be getting a status report as to where we are in November on that matter. But there's a clear directive by the MINMEC of DHS that provinces must actually accelerate the delivery of the target they've set. In the 1,421 list we gave them of the destitute we have applied, they've been broken down into provinces, how many in KZN, how many in whatever, and we're monitoring those areas closely. Hopefully with collaboration with provinces, we'll be able to push the figures to ensure that the under-delivery in this area is better this year, if not overachieved according to the target set with DHS. We're optimistic that this program is now moving in the right direction. However, the biggest challenge that has been there in this program is lack of effective monitoring and evaluation, and actually monitoring the performance of the contractors that actually we work with. And we've identified it as an area of collaboration with DHS. We're optimistic that it will also help. database. Much has been said. I will not repeat, but what has been said, suffice to say that with CETA, with DDSI and ourselves, I think we're beginning to have a better sense. Let me indicate to the members that a diagnostic analysis on the data challenge has been done. We were having 11 various databases in the department, 11. The fragmentation was amazing. It was therefore opening up for a range of possible risks, a range of possible fraud. And that, I think, now there's a process towards consolidation and better management of that. And it is because now we have a collaborative effort with CETA and them, and we have identified the problem. We are moving towards diagnosis to actual solution, which then brings us to the IT issues that we're dealing with. There is a business re-engineering element of the ITC element so that we can have a better systems that can assist us to manage the database. Secondly, the database has also been complicated by the fact that we are discovering as we're doing the analysis that there are members from the MSDS who are in the database. So who gets into the database and what qualification is also complicated by the definition of the Act in terms of who is a military veteran. So there's interdependencies between changing the definition, because the data now has got MSDS, it's got conscripts, it's got a range of people who we have to make a determination. Are they really in the purview of this database? So we are comfortable from point of view of the problem statement that we're on top of the issues. The point is moving swiftly. And our target is a bit tight. We want to say that by the end of the financial year, we should have been able to find a solution that's sustainable. However, it will require all players to come to the party. The data has been sent that we have to the various military veterans associations, because we're clear that we can't solve it unless associations help us in the verification of their members, especially the non-statutory forces. Letters have been written to them. We are actually expecting that we'll be meeting with them to tell us how far have you verified so it becomes easier for us to manage. This month we're meeting with them, especially the non-statutory forces. We've invited their various representatives who we have been given through SANVA to interact with, and hopefully collaborating with them will solve the database. It's quite a complex issue, it's got history, and we're far from thinking that we are utopian about it. It's a complex issue that has history, but processes are in place to be on top of it. Transport. We've made a breakthrough. We've met with the Department of Transport. A draft MOU is in place. We are going to be mainstreaming it for discussion at EXCO. And then hopefully then with that MOU, we'll be able to solve the matter that we're raising. It's dealing with not only the issue of collaboration with the Department of Transport, but looking at job opportunities, business opportunities for military veterans. And alongside, we're hoping that also an SLA with the various entities under the Department of Transport will have them to be worked on to actually guide how we deliver per area of the memorandum of understanding. Lastly, the policy issue around it. We have no policy. We have set aside about 2 million rand to work on a policy on this matter, and hopefully then we'll be able to deal with the policy issue might be completed before the end of the financial year. That's our target. Hopefully then we'll be able to, collaborating with the Department of Transport, complete that process. Pension. I must indicate that this process was for some time not attended to. Members will recall that there was a process that was led through the National Treasury to amalgamate and consolidate the pension schemes that are there for military veterans. You would know that social development has got some elements of pension or stroke grant for military veterans. You'll recall that there's pensions in the GPEF. There is some pension that's supposed to have been residing with us, and that was going to be consolidated into what is referred to as a military pension. That process was supposed to have been driven by National Treasury. We're clear now that because it has been stalled for some time and it's an urgent issue to create gainful income, that we must take initiative to resuscitate that process. But it's an interagency, interdepartmental collaboration, because we want to consolidate the entire pension scheme within government to be able to have meaningful income for military veterans. We are looking at possibly before the end of this month, or worst case scenario in November, to have that meeting to be able to resuscitate the process. communication, I'll be brief. We acknowledge the constructive criticism that we must have a rural strategy to be able to reach out to rural areas, and we'll incorporate those suggestions. So far, our interaction is much more better than before with military veterans. We are using SMS processes. We are also engaging with them through roadshows, which we've completed in 9 provinces. The second round is coming before the end of the financial year again on roadshows, and we'll also invite the members to join us. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, honorable members and colleagues, I'm going to limit myself to issues raised around ESM. The first point, the contradiction between the reported businesses and with that of DM. The contradiction is noted, but I can confirm that according to the register in the department, we have 132 businesses in our register. I'm not sure how the 100 came about. On the issue of letter of support, what happens is military veterans, when participating in tenders or when invited to participate in any venture, they come and ask for a letter of support which will validate whether that is a military veteran or not, but also it will state in that letter the actual business that member has. So it's kind of more of confirming whether that is a military veteran or not. On the issue of the policy on burial support, members did advise us that we should be paying within a given financial year, not pay retrospectively. We took that and we amended the policy, but also we paying within a given financial year for burial support. The issue of the memorial sites, what AGSA disputed was more to do with the money we spent towards, in particular, the Devilwood memorial sites. We try to demonstrate as to the amounts vis-a-vis the actual site and the improvement the department paid towards, but it was not accepted. But going forward, I think we'll choose memorial sites that can easily be proven in terms of expenditure and the portfolio of evidence. The company that was sent by the honorable member to address the expenses around the tombstone is been noted. However, I think it's difficult to engage in issues of supply chain management in that fashion. Maybe with armed with that information, discussions between myself and the CFO and the department will occur so that we can see how best can we utilize that services with quality but paying less. I think most of my issues have been already dealt with by the acting DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the DG, and my colleagues. I will try and be as brief as I can. Because the DG has also conversed on the issues related to finances. Probably starting with SANVA, honorable members requested to know whether we do fund SANVA in terms of the budget. Yes, there is a budget allocation to SANVA for this year is 15.6 million. That covers all logistical arrangements for all recognized organizations, and then but the requirements and requests will come through the office of SANVA. So we do support SANVA. In terms of the appeals board and the advisory council as well, we do support them financially. Those two are also managed, SANVA is through ESM branch, and then the two other statutory organization, which is the appeals board and the advisory council, they are managed through the office of the accounting officer. And then in terms of I'll try and be as brief as I can in terms of irregular expenditure, just giving the analysis, probably the status and the progression of the cases. I will edge through you, Chair, that we then be allowed to engage further with the process and then report accordingly in terms of the progress on irregular expenditure. But briefly, as already noted by AG, 106 million was through financial delegations. And briefly, what happened is at some point in time when the then CFO was on special leave, then there was a lapse in terms of formalizing the delegations, and then that also led to the management at that time for the continuity of provisioning of services, taking decisions in terms of because at that time the delegations were centralized within his office, so only he could sign all payment advices. So that was causing an impediment in terms of execution of payments, and then management then made a decision to decentralize. So then, but there was no formal signed off document regularizing that decentralization. So basically, then all that we did was to extract all payments that took place during that period until we formalized the delegations, we disclosed them as irregular. However, I must state, that was mainly in relation to the provisioning of benefits, predominantly in education support and health, etc. And there were a few instances where then there was a general procurement of goods and services, but those we also confirmed whether those there were no anomalies with those procurements, so that we had confirmed. And hence that 106 is purely based on lack of financial delegations during that period. But however, as noted by AG, that matter has already been resolved. There is a formal delegation in place. And then linked to that, the balance, as already noted, it's predominantly around contract management. Big issues there is around the provisioning of telephone services through Vodacom, the provisioning of landlines through Neotel. There was MTN at some point in time, but that was all the MTN contracts were migrated into the Vodacom main contract. So basically all contract management now for Vodacom, we are busy preparing to migrate into the National Treasury RT contract, so that then we eliminate the issue of irregularity, as well as all other contracts that are currently running in place. We are busy with the procurement process to ensure that it's properly regularized. And then the balance was purely non-adherence to SEM processes, predominantly driven by poor planning at that time, where the department will normally procure at the last moment. And probably that would normally then cause the department to realize irregularity. So basically, this is where we're at. We've done all the analysis. We had commenced with the investigation. Investigations are underway, but I'm urging the committee to give us more time to process the investigation and then report accordingly. In terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, yes, we disclosed 3.2 million. As the members has observed, there was a payment which was 950,000 related to one military veteran. It was for dental services. Unfortunately, at the time of preparing the payment advice, that error was not picked up in terms of validation process. However, after investigation, then we realized that DOD, instead of charging us 3,000, they charged us 950,000. They have written back to us to say they've now picked up where the error was, which was a punching error, and then they will pay us the difference. So they will be paying us that money. Then it talks then to the accuracy of the invoicing from SEMS through to DOD and then to DMV, which is then now we are working with them so that they can formalize a proper billing system that will talk to all electronic systems that are in place within all SEMS facilities. So CETA is busy assisting them in terms of developing that system so that we can track and validate all invoices electronically, not manually. Then that also then takes me to the issue of accruals, because amongst other accruals, the biggest spender is education. It's mainly due to timing difference, because the academic period commences in January for basic education, higher education around February. So it becomes a bit challenging for the department to collect all the invoices and process procurement before the end of the year, and hence the higher value of accruals. And then linked to that then is the issue around the SEMS invoices, because as a good example, we closed the year with about 33 million worth of accruals related to health services rendered by SEMS. The biggest issue is the transmission of invoices between DMV and SEMS. We currently have roughly about 6 months time lag between SEMS processing an invoice, sending it through to DOD, and then DOD billing at DMV. And then link back to the other issue that I've already raised of then SAMS and DOT working on a billing system that will ensure timely submission of invoices to DMV for payment. Then that is the plan in place now. They started the process around June. I saw there was an invite for DMV to attend a demo on Wednesday. However, as we are here and we've got another commitment, they have to reschedule, but we are engaging in order to close that gap. And then generally around payment of suppliers within 30 days, as the DG has indicated, SMMEs, there has been very few cases where we have not paid SMMEs on time. Predominantly, why we ended up not adhering, as AG has indicated, it was mainly due to the accrual brought forward from the previous year, which was mainly 15.5 million was CETA invoices. There was a huge backlog. So then we had to play catch up, and hence then you may have noticed that we shifted funds from program 3 to program 1. Amongst other reasons was to close that gap of the previous year's accruals, for CETA, predominantly for CETA. And then the second element was issues around payment of the operating lease between us and DPW, where there was a breakdown in terms of submission of invoices. So we've closed that gap by invoices being submitted directly to logistics rather than to corporate services. And then there were other issues in terms of training and development payments, where suppliers would not be accredited either in CSD or they would not be in a position of tax clearances, tax clearance certificate at the time of us committing to for them to render services for us. And then that causes delays in terms of the payments because they have to get their tax status in order before we could pay them. Otherwise, we'll end up with more findings. And then probably, as DG has indicated, the elephant in the room is around travel. I know I've been giving more or less the same explanation when I come here because we've got huge volumes in terms of logistical arrangements. It's mainly driven by the logistical support that we give to Advisory Council, Appeals Board, and mostly to SANVA. Because SANVA is predominantly all members that are eligible for logistical support. And then between ourselves and TWF, because invoices are manual, it's manual submission, it's manual handling within DMV, and we currently haven't yet implemented Logis. So then it becomes a challenge for us to process the invoices on time. But we are working on that in terms of implementing the Logis system. I think I've covered all the critical areas from my part, Chair. Yeah, I think I've covered the critical parts.
Thank you very much. And look, we are going to once more put all those challenges on our dashboard. And those which were identified by members, and those which were identified by yourselves, and those which were identified by the Auditor General. Now, what we would expect from you is that, in which I think you have already started doing it very excellently, that in every time when you do your quarterly reports, you must start with those challenges as to how did you deal with them. And those areas which needs budget intervention, we are about to adopt our BRRR report. I think they will be located in that report. And then we work from there. And thank you very much, honorable members, and the department. Our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Questions which are, there are questions which were not answered. You want us to reopen our meeting. If you write those questions, then I will take those questions. Give us a written report.